creation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm alive.
That theme song is a little bit familiar to some of you out there in Radio Land. The Library Show, we are back. And if you notice a little change in the pronoun that was used, we're going to change things up a little bit. I'm still going to be a part of it, and I'm Sarah Bell, but I have two additional co-hosts, so we'll get to kind of share the joy of being on Raven Radio and talking about books and other good ideas and maybe ideas that aren't so great. So the Library Show, I think, will in some ways remain a bit the same, but because we have two additional hosts, it will probably evolve a little bit. So I'd like to introduce the co-hosts of the Library Show. We have Carrie Sagel, who's librarian at Blatchley. Welcome.
Welcome, and thank you, Sarah. I feel like I've arrived. I'm going to be on a radio show in Sitka.
That's right. That's right. It's a true mark of a Sitkan is to have a program on Raven Radio. And my other co-host is Brooke Schaefer. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of an experienced hand at being on the radio.
Let's see. I guess I've been volunteering for a little while, subbing for some shows and doing a classical show. And yeah.
Great. And you're also involved with the library.
And I am. I work at the library. That's right. I'm assistant librarian at the public library.
And I think it just kind of goes to show that I think libraries still continue to have a very valuable role in the community. I like to think of the library as the place to go when you have a question, or the place to go when you're looking for a good book, a good movie, you know, magazines, recipes. And I know that one thing that we like to always emphasize is that if the library doesn't own the book that we are talking about, that's okay, because the local public library, and I think we call it the Sitka Public Library now, I may slip a little. Sometimes I might refer to it as Kettleson, but it is the Sitka Public Library. It has really generous interlibrary loan services. So if we talk about a book, or if our guests talk about a book that maybe the library doesn't hold in its own collection, they'll make a really good effort at getting a hold of it for you. So
I'll make a little plug there, too, that we just joined the consortium library. So right now our catalog has grown enormously, and we can get books much like interlibrary loan, but they're actually kind of belong to the Sitka Public Library now as well. The books that are living in Anchorage or Matsu Valley, you can also get those books now very easily. You just place them on hold. They appear in our catalog. You don't have to fill out a special form. So it's even easier to get more books than ever.
Yeah. And I think of going into the library so often, and I would turn around and I would look at the shelves just loaded with things to read. And I in some ways felt a little desperate, because there's no way in the scope of my lifetime that I can read them all. So what I always enjoyed was when people came into the library, I would say to them, "Oh, what are you reading? You know, oh, the book that they returned, is that any good?" And so I've always really enjoyed having personal recommendations. And I kind of think that the Library Show is sort of like that conversation that I would have leaning across the desk, or seeing somebody reading a book as they're waiting for an airplane and asking them what they're reading. And I just like that personal touch. I made my living reading book reviews, and I was often very surprised at the book that I got compared to what I read in the review. So I always liked that personal recommendation. Well, let's get to the heart of the show then. So, Brooke, what do you have in your book bag?
Well, today I brought three books with me. One of the things I love about this time of year, the fall here in Southeast Alaska, is that you can read a little bit more usually because the weather usually turns a little bit nasty and the days get shorter. But it's also a time of year when you start closing down your garden if you grow food in your yard. And so one of the things that I enjoy doing is coming up with recipes or things to do with some of the things in my garden that I'm getting out this time of year. So I got a book from the library called Pickles and Relishes, 150 Recipes, Apples to Zucchini. And I was particularly looking for something to do with cabbage. We grow cabbage, red cabbage, and we like to make sauerkraut, but I wanted to think of other ways to use the cabbage to preserve it for the year to come while we weren't growing throughout the winter. And so this book is a sweet little book. It has a lot of recipes and a very short section in the beginning about kind of how to do canning and I guess water baths and a little bit about pickling and fermenting. So it's kind of a nice general book, but the part that I was interested in was the recipe section. And I found one called Spiced Pickled Cabbage. And so it was perfect for what I was looking for. I was looking for a recipe for our red cabbages. And if you do this recipe, I recommend using red cabbage because it looks so pretty when you finish with it. It's got this nice pink color to it. And it's kind of a tangy and yet sweet relish that you end up with. And you could eat it as a side dish, a colorful, pretty pink side dish on your plate. Or you could eat it, I think, kind of like a traditional, like sauerkraut is often eaten with maybe sausages or bratwurst, that kind of thing. You could eat this spiced pickled cabbage in the same way.
So are you going to tell us how to make it?
Yeah, it's all actually right. Very simple. I think what I'll do is I'll just tell you the ingredients. So it makes 4 pints, and you'll warm water bath them at the end of putting them together. You take 4 quarts of shredded red or green cabbage, 1/2 cup of pickling salt, 1 quart white vinegar, 1.5 cups of sugar, 1 tablespoon mustard seeds, 4 teaspoons grated horseradish, 1 teaspoon whole cloves, and 4 cinnamon sticks. And I don't know if you want the play-by-play of exactly how to make this, but as you can see, the recipe is not that complicated. There aren't that many things involved in it. It does take a day, more than just a day, because you want to layer your cabbage with salt and let it sit overnight, and then you rinse it out before you actually then begin processing it the next day. And you just combine all of the other ingredients in a saucepan and bring it to a boil. All the other ingredients except for the cloves and cinnamon, which you tie in a spice bag or a cheesecloth, and then you simmer that in the solution that you've created for 15 minutes. And then after that, you just pull your spices out and you pack the cabbage that you've prepared the night before into your pint jars, and you fill it up with the vinegar solution that you just made. And then you use a 20-minute hot water bath to seal them.
I'm getting hungry. So what was the title of that book again?
The book is called Pickles and Relishes, 150 Recipes, Apples to Zucchini. So if you're closing down your garden, you know, for the fall and getting kind of some of the last things out, there's probably going to be a recipe in this book for something you might be harvesting, and anything from fruit
to
vegetables.
And they have that at the local public library.
Yeah, this one I checked out at the library.
Okay. Carrie, what do you have in your book bag?
Well, first I want to mention that the horseradish in that recipe sounds really good to me.
Yes.
Add spice to it. I'm going to talk about books or things I'm reading on apps. And I downloaded an app called Free Books, and what it does is provide you access to some number of books that are in the public domain that have gone out of copyright. And the book I'm reading is The Scarlet Pimpernel, which I only know through the movie that I watched many years ago and quite loved. And The Scarlet Pimpernel is a story about Sir Percy, who seems quite a fop. He's interested in the way he folds his handkerchief and presents at parties. But what you quickly learn is that he has a secret identity, and one of the first secret identities in literature, and he is the Scarlet Pimpernel. It's the time of the French Revolution and the Reign of Terror, and he makes trips to France, to Paris, to rescue the noble who are on their way to the guillotine, and he goes to rescue them.
So, I love that book.
Yes.
Do you have a selection from that?
I do have a selection from the book. I have to, I'm on my device, so I have to find it.
Okay, well.
I'll go into Free Books, and it's loading my Free Books. The coffee room, indeed, lighted by two well-polished lamps which hung from the raftered ceiling, looked cheerful and cozy in the extreme. Through the dense clouds of tobacco smoke that hung about in every corner, the faces of Mr. Jellyband's customers appeared red and pleasant to look at, and on good terms with themselves. Their host and all the world, from every side of the room, loud guffaws accompanied pleasant, if not highly intellectual, conversation, while Sally's repeated giggles testified to the good use Mr. Henry Waite was making of the short time she seemed inclined to spare him. They were mostly fisher folk who patronized Mr. Jellyband's coffee room, but fishermen are known to be very thirsty people. The salt which they breathe in when they are on the sea accounts for their parched throats when on shore, but the Fisherman's Rest was something more than a rendezvous for those humble folk.
That's, you know, I've always loved that book. And I remember reading one time, and I think it's Restoration Comedy, where they have these guys who, they just seem like they're much more into their clothes than anything else, except under that exterior of foppishness lies a really neat character.
And in the movie, the character is played by Leslie Howard, a well-known British stage and screen actor, who died during World War II during service, coming back from, I think, the Middle East on a passenger plane that was shot down by the Germans.
Oh.
So he died in service.
Well, that kind of makes an interesting transition to a book I was going to talk about. I really love survival stories anyway. I was on the boat this summer, and I tend to find that I like to read boat-like literature. So I had gone into the local bookstore and just kind of picked this one up quickly. It shows a picture of three men who are pretty emaciated on the front called The Raft, but I knew they survived, so I liked that. And it was The Courageous Struggle of Three Naval Airmen Against the Sea by Robert Trumbull. And what's really interesting about this, or one aspect that was interesting about it, was that because they were on a bombing mission, and they got lost, I don't know if they've ever figured out how they got lost, and in fact had to ditch into the ocean. And so, and they are all just enlisted men, but the guy who was the pilot of the plane pretty much took charge of their survival. They didn't have very fancy rafts in those days. And in fact, after they did survive, and after they were picked up, that was greatly improved, the survival gear that they were given to in case they had to ditch into the ocean. And also the double risk of the fact that they were in territory where they could be very easily picked up by the Japanese. So it's an incredible survival story. At times, you know, just when it seemed like they might have a few things sort of worked out, along would come a storm and it would toss them into the ocean, and they might lose one critical piece of equipment. Very little food, and always, ironically, when you're on the ocean, drinking water is a huge problem, and they managed to capture that using the rags that they were tying on their heads. They would sop up as much as they could and then wring that into their mouth. They, you know, didn't even have a can to bail with. So incredible survival story, and they couldn't release the details because this was during World War II and about 1942 when they were actually shot down. So I sort of feel like it would be interesting to hear the rest of the story, and I don't, in fact, know if that exists. But the book called The Raft by Robert Trumbull is a great survival story on the ocean.
Was Robert one of the survivors? Was it written by one of the people on the raft?
Let me quickly get a picture. Because Gene Autry, I can't remember whether, I don't think that Robert was one of them. There are several pictures of them in here, and I'm kind of paging to that. So there was Tony Pastula, Harold Dixon, and Gene Aldrich with the survivors. And I think it was The Story as Told to Robert Trumbull. So really great survival story on the ocean.
Well, I have a maritime poem.
Oh, good.
One of the apps that I use is Poetry Daily, and it provides a new poem every day. And then you can just hit the random button and get a random button from their vault. And I got this poem by Seamus Heaney. It's called Postscript. and sometime make the time to drive out west into County Clare along the flaggy shore in September or October, when the wind and the light are working off each other so that the ocean on one side is wild with foam and glitter, and inland among stones the surface of a slate-gray lake is lit by the earth lightning of a flock of swans, their feathers ruffed and ruffling, white on white, their fully grown headstrong-looking heads tucked or cresting or busy underwater. Useless to think you'll park and capture it more thoroughly. You are neither here nor there, a hurry through which known and strange things, as big soft buffetings, come at the car sideways and catch the heart off guard and blow it open.
Wonderful. I like Seamus Heaney.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and here we are between the ocean and the land here in Sitka.
That's right.
It's describing us. I actually brought a poem, too. I don't know if now would be a good time to switch over to that.
Perfect.
One of the books that I read this fall is by Terrence Hayes called How to Be Drawn. And he is a poet that maybe some people have heard of because he won the National Book Award in 2010, I think, for his book called Lighthead. And I read a review about this, too, in The New Yorker some time ago. And one little piece from it I wanted to share with you all is the writer of the review, Dan Chiasson, says, in American poetry, if a black person wants to exist at all, he can either submit to representation by white artists or choose to be portray himself. And so I think this How to Be Drawn by Terrence Hayes is an attempt at that. He's a black man and a poet, and there aren't that many black poets in America. And so Terrence is one of those poets kind of taking on that role of trying to write himself into the canon and address, I guess, race issues. So one of the poems I thought I would read is called Black Confederate Ghost Story. Attention, African-American apparitions hung, burned, or drowned before anyone alive was born. Please make a mortifying midnight appearance before the handyman standing on my porch this morning with a beard as wild as Walt Whitman's. Except he is the anti-Walt Whitman, this white man with Confederate pins littering his denim cap and jacket. And by mortify, dear ghosts, I mean scare the snot out of him. I wish I were as tolerant as Walt Whitman, waltzing across the battlefield like a song covering a cry of distress. But I want to be a storm covering a Confederate parade. The handyman's insistence that there were brigades of black Confederates is as oxymoronic as terms like civil war, free slave. It is the opposite of history. Goodbye, plantations doused in Sherman's fire and homely, lonesome women weeping over blue and gray bodies. Goodbye, colored ghosts. You could have headed north if there was a south to flee. In Louisiana, north still begins with Mississippi, as far as I know. East is Alabama, west is Texas. And here is this fool telling me there were blacks who fought to preserve slavery. Goodbye, slavery. Hello, black accomplices and accomplished blacks. Hello, Robert E. Lee bobblehead doll on the handyman's dashboard, whistling Dixie across our post-racial country. Last night, I watched several hours of television and saw no blacks. NASDAQ, NASCAR, not a black. I wish there were more ghost stories about lynched Negroes haunting the mobs that lynched them. Do I believe no one among us was alive between 1861 and 1865? I do and I don't. We all have to go somewhere, and we are probably already there. I know only one ghost story featuring a brother in Carrollton, Alabama, dragged to the center of town in a storm for some crime he didn't commit. As he was hung, lightning struck a window on the courthouse he's been haunting ever since. Attention, apparitions. This is a solicitation, very much like a prayer. Your presence is requested tonight when this man is polishing his Civil War relics and singing "Good Old Rebel Soldier" to himself. Hello, sliding chairs. Hello, vicious whispering shadows. I'm a reasonable man, but I want to be as inexplicable as something hanging a dozen feet in the air.
That last line makes me take my breath in. And it's
scary.
Yeah, and also I think it's particularly relevant for what's, you know, in the news these days, you know, when I'm reading a lot about those kinds of incidents still, they haven't gone away.
Yeah. I think that's why the work that Terrence Hayes is doing is so important, to kind of try and address those issues and bring those issues into our art as well. I think others are doing it as well.
And it needs to be in our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to talk about a nonfiction book, which is unusual for me. Well, I guess The Raft was nonfiction, but this is it's a book called Rain, which also seems very pertinent to this time of year, A Natural and Cultural History by Cynthia Barnett. And what I found fascinating is she sort of took a look at rain in, I guess, typically as you might expect. The first chapter is on elemental rain, and she really talks about the physics of rain and the shape of a raindrop and how we have draughts and then we have too much rain. And then she talks about writers and how that they've captured the idea of rain, the weather watchers, so she kind of looks at meteorology and how the prediction of rain occurs, and who some of the founding forecasters were, and then also the time, the period when particularly I think Russia was spending a lot of time trying to make rain happen by seeding clouds and things like that. And it's, you, in spite of the fact that I live in a very rainy climate and you think maybe I wouldn't want to be reading about rain, she really writes very well for a layperson. And so, for example, here's a paragraph in the very, very beginning called Origins. Wrapping our bodies in Gore-Tex and our cities in giant storm gutters, humans crave mastery over the rain. Yet even in the age of precipitation measuring satellites, Doppler radar, and 24-hour weather streamed to our smartphones, rain does not give up its mysteries. Hundreds of tiny frogs or fish sometimes fall in a rainstorm, as they have since the beginning of recorded history. Despite forecasting supercomputers that crunch more than a million weather data observations from around the world each day, the rain can still surprise the meteorologist and catch the otherwise elegant bride cursing on her wedding day. So I find that she kind of can interweave some of the more complicated aspects of rain with, I guess, what we would call the everyday. So I really, it is a fascinating read. And, you know, maybe we all need to get a little more acquainted with rain. I don't know.
It seems like around here we're on the perpetual quest for the perfect Gore-Tex, right? Like, we haven't found the equipment yet that actually keeps us dry for a sustained period of time.
You know, yesterday when they keep talking about fabrics that breathe, I don't know, but I still tend to end up with as much moisture on the inside as I do on the outside. So yes, I mean, I just have this thing in my brain that someone needs to invent a fabric that is kind of like a shark skin, and so every little teeny tiny, it would be kind of like little scales that you could pull a little string and the scales would open. And then when you really needed weatherproofing, you know, you pull the string again and the little scales would close up. Something along that, you know, nanotechnology, that'll do it.
Sure, it's right around the corner.
I think that's it. So anyone who, you know, patents that needs to give me at least some credit. Do you have anything more in your book bag, Carrie? Did you have anything?
I have another poem. This is from a different app called the Poetry Foundation app.
Okay.
And it's not my favorite, but it does have a unique aspect. It has two wheels. So you roll a wheel with emotions. And the emotion I got was optimism. And then you roll another wheel, and I got science and industry. And under there was the poem, The Cave Painters by Eamon Grennan. And I don't feel like I'm reading great today, but I'm going to give it a try. Holding only a handful of rushlight, they pressed deeper into the dark at a crouch until the great rock chamber flowered around them, and they stood in an enormous womb of flickering light and dark light, a place to make a start. Raised hands cast flapping shadows over the sleeker shapes of radiance. They've left the world of weather behind them and gone on in, drawing the dark in their wake, pushing as one pulse to the core of stone. The pigments mixed in big shells are crushed ore, petals and pollens, berries, and the binding juices oozed out of chosen barks. The beasts begin to take shape from hands and feather tufts, soaked in ochre, manganese, madder, mallow white, stroking the live rock, letting slopes and contours mold these forms from chance, coaxing rigid dips and folds and bulges to lend themselves to necks, bellies, swelling haunches, a forehead or a twist of horn, tails and manes curling to a crazy gallop. Intent and human, they attach the mineral, vegetable, animal realms to themselves, inscribing the one unbroken line everything depends on, from that impenetrable center to the outer intangibles of light and air, even the speed of the horse, the bison's fear, the arc of gentleness that this big-bellied cow arches over its spindling calf, or the lancing dance of death that bristles out of the buck-struck flank. On this one line, they leave a beaked-headed human figure of sticks and one small, chalky human hand. We'll never know if they worked in silence, like people praying, the way our monks illuminated their dark ages in cross-hatched rocky cloisters, where they contrived a binding labyrinth of lit infinities to spell out in nature's lace and fable their mindful, blinding sixth sense of a god of shadows, or whether, like birds tracing their great bloodlines over the globe, they kept a constant gossip of praise, encouragement, complaint. It doesn't matter. We know they went with guttering rushlight into the dark, came to terms with the given world, must have had, as their hands moved steadily by spider light, one desire we'd recognize. They would, before going on this border zone, this nowhere that is now here, leave something upright and bright behind them in the dark.
Thank you very much.
I love cave paintings.
I like the cross, the ability to sort of search with emotion and subject. That's fun. Yeah. Well, believe it or not, we're getting close to the end of our show today. So what I'd like to do is just review some of the titles. Brooke, what were the two books that you had a chance to talk about?
I talked about Pickles and Relishes, 150 Recipes Apple to Zucchini, which you can get at the public library, and How to Be Drawn by Terrence Hayes. And I'm not sure if you can get that yet at the public library, but you can get it at the bookstore.
Or they might bump into you.
Yeah, you can borrow it from me.
Also, I talked about a book called Rain, A Natural and Cultural History by Cynthia Barnett. It's a nonfiction book, and it sort of covers both the science and the literary, I guess, elements of rain, in amongst a lot of other things. And a great survival book called The Raft, The Courageous Struggle of Three Naval Airmen Against the Sea by Robert Trumbull. So I just like to remind listeners that the library show is back, and we love all things pretty much library, I think, and particularly want to encourage people to read for a whole host of reasons. It's good for your brain and it's good for your soul. and we're also... So now we have three hosts, me, Sarah Bell, Carrie Sagal, and Brooke Schaefer. So the shows will vary a little bit. We're also always looking for people who are willing to come on and talk about books. And what people always find out is that the time goes really, really quickly. And the stories from the books speak for themselves. So you don't have to come up with anything brilliant. Just share some of your favorite books. One other element that I like to do is encourage people to go to the library and go past the new bookshelf. Please feel free to come in and talk about books that you may have read 10, 15, 20 years ago that are still worth taking a second look at. Because there are many things in the library that are wonderful to read that still stand the test of time and are worth sharing. And I kind of like to hope that those gems can be rediscovered. So we hope that you will contact us if you're willing to be on the show. I'm sure we'll be asking many of you. And also, if you want to get ideas for books to us in other ways, I'm thinking maybe we'll have a Facebook page even. But that remains to be seen. So thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Library Show on KCAW Raven Radio.